2 of that 590 show coming at you live on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com. Matt Berger and Matt Rocchio alongside John Giamatti Rudolph behind the dials. Joining us, though, right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line is our friend Kevin Brackett from RealSpoilers.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett. Kevin, I'm so happy you survived your bachelor party. And was it anything like the Tom Hanks movie?
Thank you, Matt. Yes, I am alive and well.
Have you ever seen that movie with Tom Hanks, Bachelor Party?
No, it's just called Bachelor Party?
It's just called Bachelor Party, and I'm telling you right now, and I'm being 100% honest, that is Tom Hanks' best movie is Bachelor Party.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because this is when Tom Hanks was funny. Like, people don't realize that Tom Hanks started out as a comedic actor. He wasn't always serious. He didn't start doing serious stuff until Big. Big was, like, his first real serious role. Before that, he was in nothing but comedies like, you know, The Man with One Red Shoe and Volunteers and Splash and his best movie, which I think is Bachelor Party. And the thing I like the most about that movie, Kevin, is that he's a school bus driver. And that's all he's really aspiring to be. He just wants to be a school bus driver. That's it. If you were going to make that movie today, he's a school bus driver, but he's studying to be like a dentist or something like that. They would have to make him so much more ambitious, because otherwise, why is this woman, this beautiful woman, wanting to marry the school bus driver?
Are you saying that school bus drivers don't have gorgeous wives and girlfriends?
I would say yes. I'm going to say yes, that none of them do. They're all dating pigs.
Fair enough.
So let's get to the movies that are coming out today. I can't believe they made, every time I see it, I go, I can't believe they made another Transformers movie, but they made another Transformers movie, Transformers The Last Night, and it's supposed to be the last one. I saw the first one in the movie theater, and as I was walking in the movie theater, I even said aloud, I can't believe I'm paying money to see a Michael Bay movie. And then I sat down and started watching like the first, I don't know, 45 minutes of the movie. And I'm like, you know what? This isn't bad. I was really kind of entertained by it. But then when they got to the scene where they're in the house and these huge, gigantic, you know, how many ton robots are sneaking around the house and somehow... Yeah, like no one notices at all that they're sneaking around this house on the outside. Like, you don't hear them moving. They're not knocking over anything. I'm like, come on. And then after that, it was just all downhill.
I completely agree with you on that part. But you know what? The problem is that when we start picking apart movies like that, and I know that we give better movies a pass, but I mean, how did that T-Rex at the end of Jurassic Park sneak into the visitor's center?
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. And here's another thing with that first Transformers movie, too, is that, okay, you have, like, this cube that these indestructible robots are trying to find, and John Voight is playing the Secretary of Defense, who is somehow in charge of everything, and his great idea is to take this gigantic cube and hide it in the middle of downtown Los Angeles that these gigantic robots are looking for, and you don't evacuate the city, you don't tell anybody about it, you just hide it and just let these robots tear the city apart. And I'm like, this is their good idea, huh? This is our government. This is our government in operation.
I think you might be confusing Michael Bay with Christopher Nolan or something, because I don't know. I mean, you know, this is a guy responsible for The Rock and Face Off and, you know, all these great action movies. I mean, the guy knows his action. That's the thing. And so they aren't necessarily the thinking man's movies.
You're right about that. They're just there to watch something blow up.
Exactly. And so the thing is with Transformers, and I don't know about you, but I grew up watching Transformers, the original cartoon. So I had a lot of love for the series. And when the first Transformers came out, the one with Shia LaBeouf and Megan Fox, you know, and John Voight, like you're talking about, you know, I was excited for it. And when I saw the movie, I thought it was just a big, dumb, fun action blockbuster type movie. Nothing wrong with that at all. But then the second one came out, and it was atrocious. It was terrible. It had racist robots, and it had just, like, really, the parents were stupid. They were visiting Sam, who played by Shia LaBeouf, at college, and getting high and, like, bumping around and making a fool of themselves. And it was just a ridiculous movie. And so it just got so stupid. And then the third one came out, and I'm like, okay, we're still doing this. All right. And the third one was a little bit better. I thought the third one was fun. I thought it was kind of returning to the roots of the first one. I'm like, okay, now we're going on the right path. It's not as stupid. We're getting rid of some of these dumb gags. Then the fourth one came out, and it just, all that went down the drain. And now here we are with the fifth one. And
this
so
is the fifth one? My God.
Yeah, I'm beginning to feel like we're not going to escape from, like, you know, I thought the third one was going to redeem itself, and it was a little better, but then the fourth one just went and threw that all away. So at this point, I'm pretty sure they're just trying to make an international blockbuster with robots punching each other, and they're going to make $1 billion. I don't honestly think they care what's in the script, because it's terrible. That's really, you know, the main thing is that these scripts, they're making jokes, and they're again, it's not, I don't think it's just my sense of humor, like, huh, I don't find that funny. It is the dumbest, laziest script. And it's just like they don't care anymore. I think they just basically go to the writers and they go, hey, just write some stuff to get us from scene to scene where we can have these robots punch each other.
Do you think, and I have absolutely nothing to base this on, do you think that, okay, you're talking about a more international global market. Do you think that it's easier to translate in all these other different various languages if the script isn't that complicated?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I hadn't thought too much into that as far as translation and can they pick up on it. So you may have a valid point, but I think more, you know, I think that most countries are English speaking, right? So if English isn't the first language, it's usually their second language. Most countries around the world do teach English in schools. So I don't think it's necessarily for translation purposes. So there may be something there, but honestly, I think it's just that they don't care. It's so lazy. And, you know, they know these things are going to make $1 billion. And until they start failing, until people stop paying to see them, I think that's what we're going to get. And it's a shame because the Transformers property, again, there's a huge fan base. There's a lot of people that grew up in the 80s and the early 90s watching this stuff. And I'm one of them, and I want just a really cool Transformers movie, but that has some kind of a cohesive, not necessarily even the plot, but, you know, a decent plot, but not dialogue that makes you roll your eyes so hard that they're about to pop out of your head. I mean, every single thing that comes out of these people's mouths, it's just absurd. You know, I'll tell you what, do you want to hear what the plot synopsis is for this movie?
Let's go for it.
Okay, I wrote this. I had a review for this on review because I don't think that I could possibly remember this, and I'll read it, and you tell me what you think.
Okay.
So basically, this movie starts out with King Arthur, and he saves Camelot with the help of Merlin. So this is King Arthur and Merlin back in those legendary times. Merlin actually doesn't have any magic at all, but he instead gets the alien robots to help him fight his battles. So everyone thinks Merlin is this great magician, but no, he's really just using giant robot aliens. So at the end of the day, he saves country and everybody's all happy, but eventually he dies, and he's buried with a magical staff that gives him control of the robot Transformer Knights who defend the Earth. Go flash forward to present day, Cade Yeager, played by Mark Wahlberg, is on the run from the feds after Transformers seemed illegal. And he's given a magical talisman from one of the ancient robot knights that basically he goes to a junkyard and he finds one of these old ancient knights from Arthurian times. They give him a medallion, which is somehow magical and powerful. Meanwhile, the character played by Anthony Hopkins, yes, Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Oscar winner.
Yeah, Anthony Hopkins is trying to get Yeager, played by Mark Wahlberg, and Professor of Arthurian Studies, her name, I don't know what her name is, doesn't even matter, but played by an actress named Laura Haddock, to save the world from Quintessa. So there's an evil villain that's like this CGI, robotic, Medusa-looking, just CGI, bland villain, and they're trying to save her from taking over the world. We'll come to find out, she's responsible for creating Cybertronian life. So Optimus Prime, the Autobots, Decepticons, all of them. This crazy evil villain created Cybertron. Now she wants to destroy Earth. So then she takes over Optimus Prime's mind and turns him into what they call Nemesis Prime. So now Optimus Prime is a bad guy. And so Optimus Prime is trying to destroy Earth. That's why he's evil. And it's a race against the clock. So you've got Mark Wahlberg and the British professor and Anthony Hopkins trying to defend the world from the evil Quintessa Nemesis Prime. And so it's just so convoluted with this whole Arthurian legend and the Knights of the Round Table. Who, you know, helped Arthur back in the day, and now the knights have to, you know, help them defend the Earth. And it's like, we don't want this, right? Let's just get a bunch of robots transforming, right? That's what the thing's called, Transformers.
It sounds like someone had an awful lot of weed whenever they decided they were going to make this movie. Like, okay, who's right now? Raise your hand. Who's the most baked? Okay, go. What's your idea?
Let's be fair to Hollywood. That's at least like 65% of movies, right?
A lot of them, yeah. I mean, some movies are even made for you to watch when you're on weed. That's what I always heard about Super Troopers. You're supposed to watch that movie when you're completely baked. Rocky was over there nodding his head. Yes.
I mean, maybe that's the problem. Maybe these movies would be better if you were high or something. But the thing is that, again, the plot is so convoluted. I mean, it just took me like 45 seconds to explain to you what the plot of this movie was. When everyone is going to the movie, I mean, do you think anyone's going to a Transformers movie for the plot?
No, they just want to see the giant robots. They want to see Megatron and Optimus Prime fight and then, you know, go home.
Right, exactly. And so that's the problem. And do you know how long this movie is?
What is it, like 2 hours?
2.5 hours.
Oh, my God. That's a long time.
Because the only thing that I can figure out from these movies, and they're all around 2 hours, 2 hours, 15 minutes, now 2 hours and 30 minutes, I think that Michael Bay feels the need to make these into long movies because he wants them to be epics and taken seriously. And the problem is that it's just boring. These are action movies, right? A good action movie, give it an hour and a half, an hour and 45 minutes, maybe. All we need is the spectacle, the explosions, the robots. I'm not asking for high art. I'm not asking for, you know, incredible script writing. But these movies have gone the complete opposite, where they don't give you any good writing. The writing is terrible. And then the movie is so long and drawn out with all this plot they've tried to cram in there that you're like, wait a minute, aren't there supposed to be robots fighting in this? You basically get like, I would wager that there's probably like 20 minutes, maybe 25, but probably 20 minutes out of about now 2 hours and 30 minutes of actual action.
See, that's the issue there. That's the problem where Michael Bay lost it. You know how hard it is to walk into a movie and keep a high for 2 hours plus? That's where he's losing it. You make an hour and a half movie like this, people are sticking with you the entire time.
Only Michael Bay is going to want to take a movie made about gigantic, indestructible robots and think he's going to be making The Deer Hunter.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem. Again, when push comes to shove, he's not trying to make just a big bombastic action movie. He's trying to make something epic. He's trying to make Deer Hunter. He's trying to make Braveheart. He's trying to make something epic. So he's putting Arthurian legend and knights and battles, and they flash forward, and then you still have the other characters that are the soldiers. You still get, you know, from like the first and second movie, you still have the soldiers fighting, and now there's a new task force hunting down Transformers. So you've got the bad guys, the good guys, the quote unquote good guys that are stopping these legal Transformers. But, you know, you've got the soldiers that are like, Transformers are our friends. And so you have all these war scenes and action scenes, and it's like, no. They've just gotten way off base with what the original was. And I'll tell you what, go back and watch that first movie, and it puts it in a completely different perspective after all after how far we've gone from the first one. You'll go back and watch that first one, and it feels like a masterpiece compared to this.
Yeah, I truly miss the days of a 12-second shot of Megan Fox's midriff as she opens
the
car.
That's the only reason why I watch that movie is Megan Fox.
Just the most ridiculous shot scene maybe ever, how long Michael Bay spent the camera just like, let's just sit it here for about 15 solid seconds.
Hey, that's the best.
This isn't going to feel awkward for anyone in the audience.
Hey, you felt awkward watching that?
I mean, at like the 7-second mark a little bit.
Oh, only you felt awkward watching that, Rockio. You know what? As much as you rile against religion, you have a lot of Catholic guilt.
Just sit there for about 10 seconds.
I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. So Shia LaBeouf is gone. Megan Fox is gone. You know, they've introduced Mark Wahlberg as of the last movie, but he wasn't in the first three. But, I mean, maybe there was something to that original cast. You know, I go back and watch that first one. Shia LaBeouf, love him or hate him, but
he's good in that movie.
That was before. Yeah, that was really before he lost it. That was kind of
true.
That was the last vestiges of, like, Holes Disney Channel Shia LaBeouf.
We brought up Sir Anthony Hopkins. What's going on with him? I mean, does he owe Michael Bay a favor? Does Michael Bay have pictures of him, you know, with a donkey or something like that? Why is Sir Anthony Hopkins in this movie?
You know, the thing is, if you go back and look over Anthony Hopkins' IMDb, it's not like he bats 1,000. No one bats 1,000, right? Everyone's got to pay the bills. Everyone's got to eat. But for the most part, Sir Anthony Hopkins is a phenomenal actor. I mean, he is a legend. I think he's incredible. If you watch the show Westworld on HBO last year, it's absolutely amazing. His performance elevates that show. And the show is written by Jonathan Nolan, Christopher Nolan's brother. So that's his writing partner. He's responsible for a lot of the dark, you know, the Batman Dark Knight trilogy. So Jonathan Nolan's a great writer on his own, but you give that material to Anthony Hopkins and it brings it to the next level. So the point is, it's not like Anthony Hopkins for the last 20 years has been phoning it in or something. The guy is still making great material. So it's not his fault. I think what it comes down to is, you know, Anthony Hopkins has to eat. He took a paycheck movie. He wanted to do something different, maybe something fun. He looked like he was having a lot of fun in the movie, so, you know, more power to him. But it just feels weird because he never phones it in, but it just doesn't quite work. And I think it's because we're used to Sir Anthony Hopkins being such this legendary actor that when you see him being this goofy old man who's chasing Transformers down, you're like, that's not right.
I challenge you right now, Kevin Brackett. Find me one blemish on the IMDb pages of Samuel L. Jackson or Nicolas Cage.
You always get to the point where Tom Cruise and Johnny Depp are like that too.
They're the pickier actors on the spectrum, if you will.
Well, Johnny Depp needs the money. I don't know if you read what he's going through, but he's about broke.
multi-$100 million divorce, pretty much.
Yeah, spending $30,000 a month on wine and spending $3 million to shoot Hunter S. Thompson's ashes out of a cannon.
Still a ball move.
You know, I was thinking about that the other day. I was thinking about how, you know, when I was growing up and I saw Johnny Depp in films, and we're talking about Edward Scissorhands, What's Eating Gilbert Grape, all those original movies that he did that I grew up with, I thought this guy was a chameleon. He could blend into any role. He's an amazing actor. And then now, you know, I don't know what has happened to him, but it seems like all we have left, Daniel Day-Lewis is retiring, so he's the other one that's, you know, phenomenal, but yeah. He says he's done after the last movie, so it's like Leonardo DiCaprio. I feel like Leo is the last one left of this generation that is actually somewhat sane.
Leo doesn't take it to the way that Daniel Day-Lewis or Depp, where you could watch two movies that they start in back to back, and if no one told you, you wouldn't be 100% sure that was the same actor in the leading role both times. That was the cool thing about both those guys. There's movies where they lose themselves, and if you're not 100% confident who the actor is.
Especially Daniel Day-Lewis.
I think Johnny Depp blends away in some crazy movies into just a character that you could not pick out as Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp's best movie, in my opinion, is Ed Wood.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, but I completely agree with you, Matt. That's what I'm saying. Johnny Depp used to be the guy. I grew up watching him, and again, he was a chameleon. I was amazed at how he would disappear into these roles, but now it's like he does a Pirates movie, he buys an island, he does a Pirates movie, he, you know, just whatever, jumps out of a plane throwing ashes around or whatever he does. It's like the guy just, he spends money. He's got all these houses. He has like 10 or he had like 10 different houses or something. I guess it just got to him where he thought he was invincible and he had unlimited funds. And even the richest of people, like if you spend money like that, you know, it's not going to last. And so I think that's why he's doing these terrible Pirates movies. We talked about that. And, you know, he's just taking some really weird roles. You know, if you think about it, what he did that, Dark Shadows? Is that the one based on the TV show recently?
Yeah, didn't Tim Burton direct that one too?
Yeah, he did. I mean, that got terrible reviews. He did, Mordecai?
Mordecai. He did The Tourist. Yeah, he did the Rum Diaries, another Hunter S. Thompson movie. So, yeah, he's made a lot of some real questionable roles. Yeah, there's no question.
Right. I'll tell you what, though, like to my point, though, I was trying to think which one it was. I went in completely blind. It was an hour and 15 minutes in when my brother turned to me and said, "You realize that's Johnny Depp in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas?"
You didn't know that was Johnny Depp from the very beginning?
I went in completely dark, and okay. I didn't see Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas until like 2004 or like 2006 probably. And so I went in completely dark not knowing, and I couldn't have picked that was Johnny Depp off the screen if I had tried. We have wonderful actors, kind of crummy to see him fall off the deep end.
We have a text coming in from Ed Roy Looks Goiter. Big was a comedy dude. You don't seriously think that was a drama, do you? I mean, he said bug in a business meeting and ate many hors d'oeuvres like corn on the cob. Okay, it was a dramedy. I mean, yeah, there were some comedic elements in that, but that was a movie
got some heavy hitting moments.
Absolutely,
yeah, that it's was got some incredibly heavy hitting moments.
If you look at Tom Hanks' IMDb, shortly after he did Big. Now, he did do some other comedies after Big, but it wasn't until Big where that was like the big aha moment where directors and producers saw Tom Hanks and go, you know what, this guy can really act. And then you see him in Philadelphia and you're seeing him in Forrest Gump and, you know, Saving Private Ryan and The Green Mile and all the other dramatic movies that he did. Big was a movie that was kind of like the showcase of his acting ability.
Yeah, that's a good point. He's definitely great, and I thought that was a role that we would see Johnny Depp grow into, you know, someone that would get older and keep getting these roles, but I don't know what happened to him. But he was one of my favorites. I honestly though, Leo, going back to Leonardo DiCaprio though, I think he's the man. Lately he's just been knocking him out of the park, and I think that he's the guy.
Kevin Brackett joining us right now on the Bellman Automotive phone line. You can follow him on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett. And, of course, download the Real Spoilers podcast at realspoilers.com. All right, Kevin, we spent about 20 minutes on the subject last night. It's been an ongoing argument. You and I talked about it a little bit online on Facebook. We got about 5 minutes left. Okay, so Matt Rocchio, who hates America and hates everything about America.
I believe you're already framing this argument in an unfair way, but continue.
He thinks that Danny LaRusso, America's sweetheart,
again,
in Karate Kid, was actually the bully and not the other way around.
Watch out the editorialization there, friend.
Kevin Brackett, critic extraordinaire. You have your critic's license, is that correct?
Yes, I am certified in 0 of the 50 states. Yes,
okay. A certified film critic here, Matt Rocchio. In your expert opinion, sir, is Daniel LaRusso an American hero or an American bully?
What a wide scope.
Oh, man. I like to leave that up to the people, to whatever they feel in their hearts. I don't want to sway anyone.
Why do I have you on, Brackett? Why do I have you on?
Well, I have to understand. What is this about Mr. Miyagi?
The argument mainly stems from, and there's a lot, there really are a lot of like threads already on the internet. I'm definitely not new with this. And essentially, you go through all the scenes, especially in the first half of the movie, where Johnny and Danny get in those fights kind of away from the karate scene. And if you rewatch those scenes again and you watch them with the objectivity without taking in the story as it's presented, which is he's the loser who has to move across country, Danny starts all of those fights and he continues them even when he's losing, to the point where Johnny just keeps beating the crap out of him because the kid won't stay down and he keeps attacking Johnny. So what do you expect the kid to do? And so my joking theory is that really Daniel LaRusso kind of invites it all upon himself. And then in the All Valley tournament, after explicitly being told that kicks to the head are illegal, he wins the tournament with a kick to the head. And no one says anything. And so I think, first of all, we give him a little bit too much credit. He might have won that tournament by cheating. And second of all, for somebody who's the lovable loser, he's the one who's starting all the fights and just getting waxed by this kid.
I can't believe what I'm hearing, Kevin Brackett.
Well, you know, I have to do some more research. You guys obviously have been going in depth with this, going undercover. I don't know. I never really thought that deep into it. But I think that the kid Johnny's the bad guy, right?
Correct.
Yes, he's supposedly the bad guy.
No, not supposedly. He is the bad guy.
You can editorialize.
I mean, I think that kid's definitely a jerk. But I mean, I could see when it comes to the tournament that there's a little bit of illegal action going on there. So I don't know. I'm on the fence with this one.
I tweeted at you the video, so if you do want to check it out.
Yes, there is a video that that Giamatti pulled up, and it's one, like I said, out there all across the internet, where they kind of break down the fighting scenes to show you that Danny's kind of, he's not in the good light that the movie really presents him in if you watch it with a more objective frame.
The only ally I have in this fight so far is Hockey Bob. This is sad. This is totally
Matt,
sad.
Did you say something about Mr. Miyagi just like to watch Daniel washes cars?
Yeah, that was Rocchio. Rocchio just kind of floated out there.
Oh, no, there's
about the relationship between Mr. Miyagi and Daniel LaRusso.
The morning show on our station, who takes a lot of topics and has fun with them. There's a little inside joke there where they've made comments that they're a little skeptical. They're a little skeptical about how healthy the relationship between Daniel LaRusso and Mr. Miyagi is, considering he's a random kid who moves cross country and befriends an elderly Asian man who then teaches him how to do karate by doing weird stuff around his house. And I was not subscribing to that theory. But again, when you present it in that light, it is a little weird.
Okay, but you know what he was? He was a father figure. Because you know who was not in that movie? Dad. And Mr. Miyagi, out of the kindness of his old Japanese heart, takes Daniel LaRusso under his wing and teaches some valuable life lessons.
I'm saying there's two sides to every story, Matt
Only
Berger.
You, Matt Rocchio, poops on everything. You're the great pooper.
You know what, Matt? What kind of world are we living in here? This is 2017 when you can't befriend an elderly Asian man.
Thank you.
You under his wing.
Thank
what
you.
What kind of world is this?
Thank you, Kevin Brackett.
And mind you, again, this was 1984? This is really before all those activists and watch groups got out in the late 90s and said, hey, maybe Stranger Danger is a real thing, kiddos.
Now, I remember hearing about Stranger Danger when I was a kid.
No.
Jeez, all right, so what can we look forward to next week, Kevin? This movie, Baby Driver, is getting all kinds of critical acclaim. I'm seeing the trailer on TV almost nonstop. Looks really good. It has Kevin Spacey, John Hamm, Jamie Foxx. It looks really good.
Yes, I think next week we can actually have a movie to look forward to, which I am really excited about. I've heard nothing but good things. I have one of the reviewers from my site has seen it. Everyone is raving about it. And again, first or secondhand from the people that have seen it, they're saying great things. So I can't wait to talk about it.
Sounds good. We look forward to it. Have a great weekend, Kevin, and we'll talk to you on Friday.
Sounds good. You guys have a great weekend.
Thanks, Kevin. That is Kevin Brackett from RealSpoilers.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett. Let's take a commercial break, and then coming up on the other side, Matt Rocchio and I are going to try to figure out what the hell the Chicago Bulls did last night and where they can go moving forward. You're listening to That 590 Show right here on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM and InsideSTL.com.